Hello, and welcome to the 25th episode of 80 Game Club, the monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game from the past to play and talk about in depth. I am your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend and co-host, David.
And I need podcasts. Podcasts about Spider-Man.
About Spider-Man?
Spider-Man!
What do you think about Spider-Man?
Well, I've got a lot of questions. Is he a threat or a menace? Redundant question. Obviously, he's both.
Obviously. You can't be one or the other.
How can you be a menace without being threatening? How can you be a threat without being menacing? It's a rhetorical question.
I love it so much, I don't even know what else to say. I don't even know what else to say. I guess at the top of the show, before we talk about Spider-Man and how much of a menace threat he is, I would like to mention that 80 Game Club has a Facebook page. You can find it at facebook.com/80gameclub. There you can keep up to date with us throughout the month and participate in the conversation by leaving comments. And do you have anything you want to mention before we get into talking about Spider-Man, David?
No. As I said, that's what I'm here for. I thought I was clear on that fact.
There it is. Yes, you were. I'm trying to think of like three D's for your name, but I can't. I was not prepared for this. It was just too good. Anyways, this month we will be discussing 2018's Marvel Spider-Man, developed by Insomniac, the same studio that brought us Spyro the Dragon, Ratchet and Clank. But most notable for us is Sunset Overdrive, which shares most of the same team members with Spider-Man's development team. And it also started at the same time, so I have a pretty solid idea that's the team that made this game. What was your familiarity with the game before we played it, David?
I've mostly heard about it from people talking about it on podcasts, especially how it changes some standard Spider-Man tropes, which we'll get into when we talk about it in more detail. And yeah, I was very excited to play it for myself.
Pretty much the same for myself. There was a lot of good buzz around this game. Everyone comparing that it was basically the best Spider-Man game since Spider-Man 2 on the PlayStation 2 /GameCube/Xbox. A game that I never played. In fact, this was the first Spider-Man game I had ever played. I had, of course, kept up to date with all the movies and stuff like that, but as far as video games, this was my first. How about you?
Well, of course, as we've gone over in a previous podcast, I played the first prototype game, and we both played the second together. I was really surprised to find out that it was all part of the Marvel Universe, as we see in this new, fully recovered version of New York. I actually have not played any of the previous Spider-Man games. I've seen all of the modern Spider-Man movies, not the ones in the 70s. But as with most superheroes, my biggest association is with the cartoons, most notably Spectacular Spider-Man, which was written by Greg Wiseman, who also created the show Gargoyles, and is the writer for Young Justice. And I really like that version because it had a long-burning story that was canceled, just as the Green Goblin finally... Well, no, I think the Green Goblin was there for a while, but there was a big cliffhanger with the Green Goblin right before the show was canceled because Disney bought Marvel and started fighting with Sony over the rights for Spider-Man animation.
Okay.
And, of course, I've also seen Into the Spider-Verse, which I watched before I played this game, and then again just before I finished it.
I did not have a chance to watch Into the Spider-Verse until just after beating this game. But it really did turn this month into a bit of a Spider-Man month for me, and it that was very nice.
Yeah.
This isn't a movie podcast, but I think we would both agree that you should go see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Absolutely.
Yes. What was your familiarity with the Spider-Man comics?
I mostly know of them from people talking about them, and occasionally, like, I hear something interesting, so I look up what the story is. I don't really read a lot of superhero comics unless there's a specific event or storyline that I can get in a graphic novel. You actually gifted me the Crisis on Infinite Earths in DC, which was a lot of fun, but I don't usually keep up with month-to-month superhero comics, except for Squirrel Girl, which doesn't get interrupted by, you know, a company-wide event every few months.
Oh, sure. I know Spider-Man goes along with a lot of the events. I have only ever read one of the storylines before this point in the Spider-Man universe, which was the
Superior Spider-Man. That was yours.
What?
Your Superior Spider-Man, right?
Superior Spider-Man, that's right. Which was when, spoilers, but Doc Ock actually swaps minds with Peter Parker during this storyline, and that was really, like, I had heard a lot about it as far as the acclaim for it, and the idea just sounded so wonderful of, like, Dr. Octopus becoming Spider-Man and deciding, you know what? The whole reason why Spider-Man kept having all these villains and all these problems was because he was just bad at it. And obviously Dr. Octopus would be able to assume the role and do everything perfectly. He would become the Superior Spider-Man and not have all those issues, not all of the life drama and women problems and whatever else Peter Parker kept failing. And it really was a fun storyline to read. And it is a character that we know so well because he's been in the movies multiple times over now. So, it's a great comic from what I've read, but I haven't read much. Anything you want to bring up before we actually get into spoiling this game?
Had heard of the Superior Spider-Man story because that was something that a lot of people were talking about, and because I'm lazy and a little bit cheap, I read the summary on Wikipedia, but I'm sure that wasn't as interesting as,
oh no,
you know, reading the actual comic. But I just was really curious where that story went when I heard what the premise was.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit predictable where it'll go, but I think the best part is that actually reading the comic, it brings up, like, what you expect will happen and then subverts those things, but then it still ultimately lands where you expected it. It's still really good, but I don't know. I don't know what else to say about that. I kind of want to get into talking about the PlayStation game now.
Right, enough about Spider-Man. Let's talk about Spider-Man.
Yes. Who knows what universe this Spider-Man is? I'm sure they've already designated a number, but it's not like it says it in this game. Anyways, I'm going to read a little plot synopsis that I wrote for this game. Peter Parker is now 23, his relationship with MJ is estranged, and he works as a research assistant for Dr. Octavius, and volunteers with his aunt at a community center called Feast. Oh, and of course, he's the Amazing Spider-Man. Spider-Man has finally brought Kingpin to justice. Now all he has to worry about are the thugs Kingpin left behind. Oh, and a sizable power vacuum in the city with a new group called the Demons, who are more than happy to fill it. It turns out that the leader of the Demons is Mr. Negative, formerly known as Martin Lee of Feast. Mr. Negative has a score to settle with Mayor Norman Osborn, and not even Spider-Man will stop him from revealing the kind of man Osborn truly is. Oh, but of course, Spider-Man does stop Mr. Negative, despite having to deal with getting kicked out of his apartment, reconnecting with MJ, and helping out Miles, who just lost his dad in one of Lee's attacks. Now captured, Lee is put into the Raft, a maximum security prison for superpowered people. However, Martin Lee isn't the only person scorned by Osborn, and it isn't long before Dr. Octavius becomes Doc Ock and breaks the Sinister Six out of the Raft to finish off Osborn's reputation by releasing an Oscorp chemical known as Devil's Breath onto the unsuspecting populace of New York. Peter now has to recapture all of those who broke out of prison, find a cure for Devil's Breath, most importantly of all, find out that everyone close to him already knows that he's Spider-Man. Is there any, what do you think of that? Did that cover all the bases?
Yeah, I think, well, I'll just go into it in more detail, but I think the most interesting thing is that you're actually helping Peter is helping Dr. Octavius, you know, create this technology that he eventually turns him into Doc Ock.
Yes. Well, it's questionable how much he was already Doc Ock before that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, yeah, well, you're, like I said at the beginning, Peter, one of the main things of this game that keeps recurring is that you're a research assistant for him. So you constantly are checking in on his office, and there's a point where Osborn... should we you cover this? I think you actually wrote that.
That's the part I want to discuss in detail.
Go ahead and discuss this in detail.
Yeah, so at the start of the game, you're... the sort of status quo is that you are behind on your rent. You are sometimes helping your aunt at Aunt May at the Feast Center. MJ has broken up with you, but the good news is you have a internship, or at least or maybe it's just a real job with Dr. Otto Octavius, who's Peter's mentor and basically his hero, because Otto wants to create prosthetics to, like, you know, help people with lost limbs. And the specific chapter that I want to talk about is actually much later in the game, because the story is sort of weaved with that. Like you said, you keep checking in because, you know, that's your day job, and also Otto's basically your friend, as well as your boss, and early in the game, you get a visit from Mayor Osborn, and Norman Osborn, obviously the standard Spider-Man villain, and he cuts funding, steals all of the, or most of the in-progress prototypes and equipment, and basically kills the project. And as you go through the story...
And the client. Don't forget that. Like, they also have a client. And he also steals him.
He basically says, we'll... He takes your test subject, basically, and says, we'll just give him a regular prosthetic. It's fine. Or, you know, one of our fancy prosthetics at Oscorp. And you... Throughout the story between that and the part I'm getting to, you get calls from Dr. Octavius, like, hey, I think I figured something out, and then, hey, I've got this amazing breakthrough, and you get this steady progression from him being, like, you know, focused on saving people and helping war veterans, to him talking about expanding the possibility of what it can mean to you know, interact with the world, with, you know, going beyond our feeble bodies and doing anything our minds can create. And it's, you know, obvious that he's running away with this idea. He's got all this new equipment from shady contracts and contacts he won't explain to you. And it comes to a head when he actually puts on these two metal tentacle arms and, you know, shows Peter, like, hey, look at this, look at all the stuff I can do, and you as Peter try to figure out what's going on, and there's a series of the sort of engineering mini games that they have where you try to correct the like overpowered voltage on the arms, and you try to, like, you know, stop it from overpowering him, and it cuts from that to a scene where Peter tells him, like, hey, you haven't, you know, properly shielded this in the way it connects to your brain. This could cause permanent damage. And he begs his friend and mentor to, you know, to stop and turn this off so that he can make sure it's actually safe and not, you know, cause damage to his brain or
I think he specifically says it's like the inhibitions region or something like that that'll get messed with.
Right. I don't remember the exact words, but he says it's not just limited to the motor functions. It's the parts of the brain that, you know, inhibit emotions and that sort of thing. And Otto turns the arms off, and, you know, like, he's sort of lifting himself up imposingly, and he's yelling at Peter, and Peter gets him to calm down and turn the arms off, and there's very, like, touching music that, you know, they had this emotional moment, but they came to an understanding. And the thing is, in this and a lot of other superhero media, they like to foreshadow villains that, you know, are villain, or, you know, foreshadow characters that, you know, are villains from other iterations. And yes, it's clear that was happening, but, you know, there are other things that are foreshadowed but don't come to fruition in just this game. And so when you're racing to try to fix the problem, and Peter's trying to convince Doc, there's a part of you that thinks that maybe, just maybe, you can do it and you can save him, and he won't or maybe he just won't turn evil yet, and it seems like it works. And he even, you know, he thanks Peter for bringing him back from the brink, and of course, because he's Spider-Man, Peter has to say, like, you know, I'm so glad, but he has to, like, run off and deal with other things. And as soon as he's gone, the TV that's been in the background the whole time switches to a speech with Mayor Osborn talking about how he solved this big crisis with the demons and Martin Lee, and now everybody should remember how safe they are with the election coming up. And Otto turns his arms back on and smashes the TV. And
dun, dun, dun.
I mean, I just loved that story through the end of the game, but it was that was the best part of it for me, was that emotion, like, oh, you really just want it. You know it's not going to end well, but you really want it to.
I discussed this game with some of my friends at work, and during the lead up to that, like, when they still hadn't actually revealed if Otto would change or not, I was telling people that, hey, like, I have to reserve my thoughts as to the story based on how they execute on all of this buildup they've been doing for this entire game. Like, I need to know how that, like, third act is really going to play out before I say anything. So it really did work well, in my opinion, how they did all of that buildup, and then they did pay it all off. But to my earlier point, well, I have two things that I want to mention about Otto. I did say earlier, though, that they kind of they bring into question how much he really got changed by the arms themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he gets that, so Norman comes in and steals all the prosthetic stuff and basically shuts him down, takes all of his funding. And then he gets all of this mysterious funding and resources, like a chapter or two after that. And one of the sources, he says, is that he tells Peter that he's doing some security modifications or something like that for the raft. And at that point in the lab, you actually see blueprints of the raft go up. And that's one of the reasons I'm saying, like, maybe, or maybe that's him scoping out how does he break people out.
Yeah.
I
don't know if this is what you were going to say, but...
The secret lab next is what I was going to bring up.
Oh, no, I was going to say it was the... Along with the blueprints for the raft, which I think he says, like, they're taking proposals, and so he's just, like... He even says, "Oh, it's an interesting puzzle that I'm figuring out, you know, in case I can get some money that way."
Yeah.
At the same time, he also has a bunch of like military grade 3D printers basically set appear on the wall, and he says he's taking a bunch of defense contracts. And
yep.
Peter, when you return to the lab later after you know, he finds out that there's this whole plan. If you examine the room, Peter actually says, like, oh, he was planning this the whole time. He was, you know, planning how to break the villains out of the raft. He was using these, you know, there were no military contracts. He was just, it was an excuse for him making armor for my greatest foes. But I think that that was intended to be ambiguous, not that he necessarily was, but to make you wonder if, you know, if he was planning the whole thing before he even turned on the arms, or if maybe he just got all of these resources because he was desperate, and then, you know, because he is a genius, he was able to turn those around immediately once he decided that that was the course of action he thought he had to take.
And then the other thing I was going to bring up as far as the questionability of it was his secret lab that you discover, where he goes into details with his dealings with each of the Sinister Five? I mean, he's number six, isn't he?
Yes.
So the other five, and most notable, I would say, of those is Martin Lee, where it sounds like he was in, he had a relationship with Martin Lee or Mr. Negative long before these events even started kicking off in this game. So that's really where it becomes a question. The other thing I would like to mention, I guess, as far as Otto in general, is that the whole reason he is building these arms is also because he is losing the ability to use his arms. The reason he wants to build the prosthetics, the drive is because he's got some sort of neurological degradation that'll make him lose his ability to use his arms eventually. So,
or to the way he made like it that sound was basically to move any of his muscles, but his mind would still be active.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that also gives you a sort of alternate explanation, you know, the initial explanation to Peter of why he's becoming so manic and obsessed with with completing his work once it's taken away. Not just because he wanted to help people, but it turns out he's desperate to create this neural interface before he's stuck in his body so that he can actually
before
he's
physically can't. Yeah. Anything else you want to mention about Dr. Octopus or Octavius Labs or anything?
Man, just this is like the very end of the game, but I just love the point where Peter realizes that, or well, where he tells Peter that he knew he was Spider-Man all along.
Yes.
And it's like a switch is flipped in Peter from pity to anger as he realizes that, you know, maybe it's ambiguous how long it has been, but at least since he became Dr. Octopus, he has not been Peter Parker's friend and Spider-Man's enemy by accident. He's known the whole time that he was trying to kill his friend and protege, Peter Parker, and Peter's like, that's it, that's the last straw.
And endangering May and everyone else. Oh, yeah. Of course. I took it as, because I didn't understand how else he would know, but when Peter left one of his suits in Octavius' labs, and then you get a phone call about it, and he goes, oh, I can't believe you're helping out Spider-Man with all of his gadgets. Here, I have some ideas for you. Like, I at that point was like, no way, he's way too smart to just fall for that.
Oh, yeah.
But
see, that also kind of made you feel like he's you know, friendly, fatherly figure, because the way I interpreted that is like, oh, he doesn't want Peter to be too embarrassed, so he'll be like, oh, yeah, obviously I'll believe what you say and give you an out.
So yeah, he's the one who comes up with the out of, oh, you're working for Spider-Man. So I have a chapter that I really want to discuss, or at least lay out in detail, as my favorite part of this game. The Grand Central Station level and the fallout immediately from there is this is the big confrontation with Mr. Negative that is built up over multiple chapters. At this point, he has the Devil's Breath, and he is planning to unleash it at the Grand Central Station. But before the mission properly begins, it starts with MJ exploring the area and seeing all of the... It's an Oscorp expo, I guess, is going on in this train station for whatever reason. Until Mr. Negative arrives and takes everyone there hostage and uses some of the stuff there to actually plan on releasing the Devil's Breath.
Well, you know, that's... A good sign of a functioning democracy is when a public space becomes a showcase for the products of the mayor's company.
So it then becomes one of the MJ stealth missions. But unlike the previous stealth missions, I really liked this one in that MJ is helping Spider-Man throughout, taking out the guards and moving through the area. Until eventually Spider-Man is able to convince MJ that it is safe for her to escape, but in the process of doing this, he hurts her feelings. And then at this point, we take over as Spider-Man, and the action continues to ramp up until we ultimately have our showdown with Martin Lee, aka Mr. Negative. And I really enjoyed the fact that this boss fight builds upon the dodge mechanic, and that it is really well choreographed and remains exciting, even though, I rewatched someone else play it, and I saw that it is super scripted as far as what'll happen. So it's not it's not as dynamic as some of the other fights you can have, but because you're doing it inside a train and there really isn't a whole lot of space, but it was still a lot of fun in the moment. Yeah, so, like, that entire buildup of, like, slow stealth mission into a Spider-Man stealth mission to fighting into boss fight, like, that ramp-up really worked well for me, and I think it executed very well. But it didn't even end there, because once you've defeated Martin Lee and have captured him, MJ and Spider-Man then participate in one of the greatest text message exchanges I've ever seen in media, hitting every beat of texting someone while they're upset and the misunderstandings due to the limited nature of text. And all the while, we're watching Spider-Man swinging around the city while attempting to handle this conversation that he desperately doesn't want to screw up. But in classic Peter Parker fashion, he almost does several times. Like that moment he texts, okay, it's over, by the way. And I knew what he meant. He means that, hey, my fight is over against Mr. Negative. But then MJ doesn't know that. She's upset, and she thinks he's telling her that the relationship is over, their partnership that they just agreed to is over. And it's just so good, and I really loved all of that. That was the high point for me in this game.
Yeah, that it's over, and then I don't remember her exact response, but MJ thinking like, oh, I guess we're over now. And it's like, no. That was great.
No, I mean Martin Lee, my fight is over.
The demons are done. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, that really was a high point for me in this game. And then the entire Act 3 was also a pretty good ride. But it didn't have as clean a build-up as this one did, and I really respect that they were able to pull this off. Okay, so
I will
anything
say,
else? Or?
Not directly related to that, but interesting thing is that Mr. Negative is the only Spider-Man villain in this game I was not familiar with before playing the game. I even had to look it up, and he is an established Spider-Man villain in the comics. But just because I was unfamiliar, I got the hints of the foreshadowing before it was revealed, but I didn't know going into the game that Martin Lee was going to be a villain, and that was interesting. Compared to Doc Ock.
I knew from the advertisements that Mr. Negative was a villain, but I didn't know that he would be Martin Lee of Feast. Like, that was fun to discover.
Yes, me too. I just mean, in the comics, his name is Martin Lee.
Yes, yeah.
So, but I didn't have that context like I did with, you know, with Dr. Octavius and Norman
Kingpin
Osborn.
And, yeah, the people who have been in movies or other media, so you're more familiar. Yeah, as far as villains go, I was not familiar with Tombstone or Taskmaster, so those were actually really cool to have come up in this game as well, in my opinion. Like,
yeah,
that brought me to Wikipedia and other comics where I'm like, oh, hey, now I know who this character is.
Yeah, I know that Tombstone has been in a few of the cartoons that I have seen, because he's, you know, he's basically a Dick Tracy villain. He's a good villain for when Spider-Man is just fighting regular mobsters and then one of them has superpowers. And I mostly know Taskmaster because for a while I played the Marvel Dice Masters game, which is a weird collectible dice game, but since his power was to copy someone else's abilities, Taskmaster was one of those, you know, broken cards / dice that is very expensive because everybody wants him because he breaks the game.
Makes sense. Let's get into what we liked about the game.
Yeah.
Should I start or you? How about you?
Okay. So, the first thing that I really liked was that, kind of like I was saying with Doc Ock and, you know, some of the other villains, there was foreshadowing, but there were also a lot of twists on iconic Spider-Man elements, like the fact that J. Jonah Jameson has a podcast that veers more towards conspiracy theories. Like, a lot of people compared him to Alex Jones. You get episodes of his podcast playing as you swing around, though you have the option to turn it off. But a lot of them are the standard, like, you know, how do you know that Spider-Man actually stopped mugging? How do you know that he wasn't just trying to steal that person's wallet, too, and got chased off when the cops arrived? And how do you know that Spider-Man didn't plant those bombs just that he'd get on TV again? And then you get into sort of weirder stuff, like, we always assume that he's a man with the powers of a spider, but what if he's a spider with the powers of a man? That was just a lot of fun. Both the way it was delivered in a way that you could listen to him while you're swinging around, and the fact that it sort of taking his previous views on Spider-Man to an extreme of just trying to come up with the most outlandish fear-mongering suggestions he can think of.
Yeah, it's the like 1 to 2 minute snippets of him just like yelling into a microphone in that sort of classic J. Jonah Jameson way. delivering a speech about Spider-Man or interviewing someone about Spider-Man. And it, there's one about disabled person, I think. And he twists it around to how Spider-Man beats up the disabled. And right. It's like, no, that's not what I'm trying to say. And then he just cuts him off and says, and we're done here.
Right, I think or at least a similar thing when he was talking about the people that were corrupted by Martin Lee and attacking people. And he's like, well, either they're evil, which, you know, the police seem to think that they're not, or they're not in control of their actions, which means that they're mentally ill, yep, which means that Spider-Man beats up the mentally ill. That's sure a series of words that you just said. They let anyone have a podcast these days.
They do.
But anyway, on the same thread, there were a lot of things that were sort of familiar Spider-Man tropes, and then there were things that were new twists, like that, like Jameson having a podcast, Peter having quit journalism to focus on science, which is kind of in the movies, but there's that. Aunt May working in a homeless shelter and sort of having her own projects that Peter's swinging in on, rather than just sort of being a concerned mother figure that makes him worry about how she's worrying about him. And the way that Miles Morales' story, which is, I guess, not so much an old story, but it's brought up in a new way this time, and the story of Norman and Harry Osborn, those are both built up slowly through the game, kind of like Doc Ock, but they're left for the future.
Yeah, if they do a second game, I'd be excited to see where that goes.
They have to let you play as Miles Spider-Man, right?
You would hope. Well, usually when Miles comes around, Spider-Man dies.
Right.
Or Peter Parker, I should say, dies. So, yeah, that'll be interesting what they decide to do there. But the whole build-up between Norman and his son, and there's a post, I think it was part of the post credits, or it was like mid-credit sequence with Harry Osborn. Like, that looked like Venom to me. That looked like a Venom hint to me, but I don't know.
Hmm.
Anyway, and then there's also a bunch of Green Goblin things you'll find during MJ missions as you're sneaking around his offices.
There's like the evil. Well, I guess doesn't have the goblin facade, but there's like the combat helmet, and there's the grenades, and the prototype flyer.
They did a pretty good amount of foreshadowing for that as well. So I believe they've said in interviews since that they are interested in making a sequel.
Yeah, or I was
something.
I was actually while doing that mission, I was pretty much expecting that during the final fight with Doc Ock, the Green Goblin would fly in and you'd have to fight both of them while they're fighting each other.
Oh, that would have been great.
Well, that's what we can hope for in the sequel.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much they could do in a sequel. I would be really excited about that. Anything else for this like, or should I list my first like?
No, you go ahead.
So the one that I really, really was surprised I liked as much as I did was the combat, which at the start of this game, I was reminded a lot of Batman Arkham series and Shadow of Mordor, which basically uses the same combat system as well. Just that flow, and it makes sense that it would act a lot like Batman, right? Because that was one of the first superhero video games that really did it right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take long of playing as Spider-Man here that you realize just how much more agile and mobile of a fighter he is, and that you, if you're doing it right, you're not spending anywhere near as much time on the ground as you would in those other games. You spend a lot more time in the air as Spider-Man. And while I was never that good at the Arkham style of combat, as I am a bit of a button masher, I would describe myself. And I would get into combos in the Arkham series that I would then be unable to properly time the evades and thus get knocked out of those combos, and it was always a little bit frustrating. But what I found so wonderful about Spider-Man is that they centralized the alert that there's someone about to hit Spider-Man. That alert is on Spider-Man himself, whereas in the Arkham series and others, the alert comes from the enemy that is about to hit you, like a little like symbol on top of that enemy will show. But by centralizing the alert on Spider-Man himself, it means that my focus is on Spider-Man himself, and it's easier for me to keep track of what's going on by keeping my vision more centralized like that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but that's a really good point.
Additionally, Spider-Man is really great about knocking or pulling enemies into the air, and those combat abilities, and you can expand on those of, like, you also create shockwaves that push everyone else away from you when you do those types of moves. But what that also allows is that it separates my targets out, thus, again, simplifying for me of what's going on in that immediate combat arena of, like, oh, I knocked this guy into the air, now it's just Spider-Man and the guy I'm hitting in the air. All of those other ground units can't reach me unless they have a gun or something. But those, again, when they're about to shoot me, I have that centralized alert on Spider-Man. So it really works well for me. Mix that in with moves like Web Blossom, which I'm sure you experienced Web Blossom, right?
Yes.
For those times when I'm surrounded, and as well as a bunch of other different web and combat abilities, then it became a true joy for me. Just the combat itself was a lot more fun than I had anticipated. And then there's two other things that I want to add on to the combat thing, but anything you want to mention before I get to those?
Yeah, I didn't like the combat quite as much. Well, I thought it was fine in a different way than say Arkham Asylum. I thought it was a lot easier to keep going and string together, but the outside of some like boss situations and some of the rarer enemies, I just didn't find the combat as engaging or challenging. There were times I literally got an alert on my phone and it turned on my phone and started reading something on it while stringing together a combo in the middle of a group of thugs, because I just didn't have to look at the screen to keep that going.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I would say it was fun enough to keep going. I never got tired of it, but it was just most of the time not super engaging.
What kept me engaged with the combat is what I would say is my next point, was that throughout the game they would give you additional objectives to complete while you're doing a combat mission, such as like perform a specific move so many times, or reach a certain combo point, or defeat enemies in a specific way, and thus giving me an incentive to continue to try out different things in the combat and not to just approach every situation with Web Blossom, even if the enemies themselves don't change a whole lot. The other thing that I really liked and want to praise about the combat is the whole focus meter. Is a special meter that you would use as a reward to instantly knock enemies out. But what they also tied to the focus is that it is also your heal mechanic. And there are so many other open world games that make healing something that you either have to prep before combat, such as like Horizon Zero Dawn, where I have vivid memory of just walking around collecting herbs for way too much time. Or there are times that the healing mechanic requires you to actually leave combat. And I'm kind of thinking, or you have to wait to regen. The what I'm kind of thinking there is like your reference earlier to Prototype, where right. if I'm getting hurt in the middle of a boss fight, usually that means that I have to go, like, I have to temporarily leave that fight, find some innocent pedestrians to consume, and then I can return to the combat now that I've healed back up. But that's not as much fun as what Spider-Man has found here, where you participate in the battle itself, in the combat, and then if you screw up and get beat up, then you if you have focus, you just instantly heal up. But if you've run out of focus, well, your option is that you just have to go back into that combat and you have to pay more attention and you have to make sure you're dodging those attacks. And I really like that. I thought they did a fantastic job with the combat in this game.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like in the fights where I did have trouble, especially ones where there were enemies with you know, the big brutes, I think they were called, and whips and swords and other more difficult enemies, I actually found myself having to decide between, do I save up my focus fighting these smaller enemies so I can try to get a finisher to take out the big guy that's causing me trouble, or do I just, you know, use it to heal, because otherwise I'm not sure if I'll survive to actually get that finisher. Yeah. And that was a really good choice on their part.
And then, as far as that goes, like the different upgrades where, depending on if you want to build up more focus for using the web gadgets, stuff like that, like they really let you customize the combat as well, which was good.
Yeah.
Okay, list something else you liked about this game, David.
I thought a thing that to me is really core to Spider-Man, even more so than a lot of other superheroes that have similar themes, is that he is constantly being pulled in every direction, and I really thought the game did a great job of giving you that feeling in the start of the game and all the way through the third act. Like, it, right at the start of the game, you know, you're like, oh, hey, there's this, you know, big takedown of Kingpin that I want to participate in because he's one of my nemeses. And once you get out of that, it's like, oh, yeah, you get a call from Aunt May saying, I thought you were going to stop by and help. And you're like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll be right there. And then you get a call from your boss, Dr. Octavius, who's saying, Peter, where are you? The investors are coming for demonstration today. And you're like, right, of course, I'll be right there. So, like, okay, I'll go to my job, and then I'll go apologize to Aunt May, and I'll help her out. And then you also get a message from your landlord saying that you know, this is your third notice that your rent is past due and you're being evicted. And then you know, while you're on the way to your job, then there's like three muggings and a break-in. Yeah. And you don't have to stop them, but what kind of Spider-Man would you be if you didn't stop them? And while you're in the middle of all of that, you get a notification that, you know, there's another broadcast of J. Jonah Jameson talking about how you never help anybody and you're just selfish and only think of yourself.
Yeah, if you were really a hero, you would let the police do their jobs.
Yep, or, you know, just take training and become a police officer, I guess.
Yeah, all that vigilante stuff.
I mean, I'll give him this. As as you talked about, this game kind of demonstrates that, you know, everyone that knows Peter already knows he's Spider-Man anyway. But the reverse isn't true, so maybe he needs the mask for that reason.
I guess that's true.
And it, following on that, especially the last part of the game, he really gets the shit beat out of him.
Oh yeah.
And then even when he's like joking about how many bones he has that aren't broken, you still have multiple things pulling you in multiple directions, and, you know, big supervillains you have to stop, but also the people that you care about as Peter Parker are in danger, and it also did a great job of pushing him to the point where he realizes he does need help, especially from the people that are already trying to help him, MJ and Miles. And I think that not only gave you that feeling of Peter Parker being pulled in a million directions, but it also lent a lot of weight to the fact that he does, you know, finally not only strategize, but, like, MJ is trying to tell him, let me help you, trust me to do things. And he finally realizes that not only can she help him, but he needs her help.
Yeah, one of the things I think they did a really great job with in this game is Spider-Man himself. Like you said, being pulled in all of the different directions. The whole story beat of him getting kicked out of his apartment and him having to go through dumpster diving trying to find his stuff. Like, it really is great how they realized Peter Parker here. And it is a joy to hang out with him throughout this entire game, in my opinion. Another thing that I think they did a pretty good job is just the constant little references to Spider-Man and the other Marvel properties throughout the world. And I wish they let you unlock the secret photo finder earlier in the game so that it would help you point out those secrets earlier instead of so late. But they are fantastic, and I really enjoyed those.
Well, that does lead into one of the things I did not like, which is... it was going to be one thing, but I think it's really two separate issues. One is that some of the sort of collectibles and side quests just seem a little too goofy and silly for the rest of the game. Like, the collectibles are really neat, but the idea that he just has that Spider-Man has like 50 backpacks with stuff from his whole career that he just sort of forgot about until you find one and they show up on the map again, and he's like, oh yeah, I forgot that I've been doing this for 8 years. Maybe I should go collect all of these things. And
yeah, a lot of them to references to comics or different storylines that I haven't read, but some of them sound really interesting.
They also give you a nice sort of idea of this particular continuity and what's happened. Like,
yeah,
you find out that, oh, Electro was the first real super-powered supervillain that he fought, and he had to modify his Spidey suit to be insulated and that kind of thing. That's nice details, but and then you find one that's like, oh, it's a locket with a picture of his birth parents, and apparently he decided that needed to be put in a backpack, stuck to a buoy next to a pier that is covered in bird shit.
Yeah, where else would you put it?
Yeah, where else would you put the locket of your
I mean, better than leaving it in his apartment.
I guess that's true. But it's that and the science stations that show up.
The research stations
that are just like, oh, it's just a little mini laboratory that has a bunch of equipment to research one thing. And every one of them has a little science experiment that Harry Osborn left just for his friend, Peter Parker, who's known to go around climbing on rooftops all of the time.
All the time.
You know, looking for these stations. And also, every time you open one, you find out that the thing it's trying to research is just about to kill a bunch of people in the next 30 seconds if you don't do something about it.
Yeah, water pressure is about to explode, or there's a virus outbreak, or yeah, there's something about to go terribly wrong. And thank God Spider-Man is there to save the day.
Right. Thank God that, you know, if Peter Parker, known urban explorer, has walked into this science lab that nobody else is monitoring, and has looked at the thing it's monitoring and is in a position to do something about it because he knows Spider-Man.
And the whole, like, emphasis on why he wants Peter to check these things out while he's away is that Harry Osborn wants him to check these out because they were set up by his mom. And that if they... And they're constantly trying to be shut down by his dad. Which, yeah. I don't see how that works because his dad seems obsessed with his mom, you know? So yeah. Why would he... I don't know. Like, that part didn't make sense to me, but it always ended with, well, now he's going to have to keep it because it's proven its worth.
Right. I can kind of... Like, at least that part kind of fits with the overarching story. And, like, I can see how they wanted to give you that so that you had an idea of who Harry Osborn is and his relationship with Peter and his relationship with his parents before the big reveal toward the end of the game. But, I don't know, in a goofier game it would have made perfect sense, but in this game it was, like, a little over the top for most of them.
Something I thought was a little over the top is that there were too many crimes in this game. I counted it up, and by my count, there are 165 crimes that you have to complete to 100% this game. And I think that's too many, because I completed crimes whenever they appeared on my map. And I almost never took the subway. It was notable that I took the subway at one point because I was like, oh, there's an achievement where I have to take the subway 5 times. Okay, I'll do that. But otherwise, like, the swinging around the city is so much fun. And there are these, like, constant things to collect or see or, again, the crimes to complete that or the J. Jonah Jameson podcast to listen to, or Yuri, or, like, there's so much always going on that I participated in everything I could throughout the game, and I still had a good 50 crimes at the end of the game to complete after I had beaten the story and collected everything else. Like, I had collected every other trophy except for the 100% each district. And I still had 50 crimes to complete at that point. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. There are too many.
I will say I did a lot more of, like, I don't feel like doing a main quest. I just want to play the game for a bit today. So I'm going to swing around and find all the crimes I can. So I actually finished all of the crimes before I finished the main story. But I will say that it was really funny when I, like, halfway through the game, I had stopped all of the thug crimes and all of the demon crimes, which are the ones that are unlocked for most of the game. Yes,
I had done that as well.
And also reached I guess it wasn't halfway through the game, it was toward the end of the middle act, when I had also unlocked everything, you know, all of the suits that you can get by unlocking level. And I was like, well, that's interesting. I need 20 more crime tokens to get this this last suit. That's a lot of crime for a city that I've solved all crime in.
Obviously, something's going to happen. Enough challenge tokens, which is another thing I didn't like, which I'll talk about later. But... yeah, the half of the crimes don't appear until the third act of the game. And that third act is also, like, the climactic, hey, I'm going to, like, focus on the story missions at this point, and I've already done all of the other research, and the only other thing I had at that point were the prisoner camps and the taskmaster stuff in between story missions. So, and of course crimes, but I just, there wasn't enough of the other stuff to, because the crimes, in my opinion, were also always very, very simple. Again, Web Blossom is a really powerful tool, and for the most part, like the most of the crimes, it was, hey, there's an event going on, you drop in there and there's a group of like 10 guys that are all conveniently standing in a circle. You just drop in the middle of them at the very start of the crime, hit Web Blossom, you're pretty much done. There might be like one or two guys that were not taken out at that point, but you just like web throw them against the wall and now they're stuck. Done. Like, yeah. Grimes did not take a lot of effort to do, sure, but there were so many, and they occurred randomly. So at that end game where I have this 50 left, it was, well, I'm just sitting here or swinging around waiting for a crime to happen. Hopefully a crime will happen soon.
Oh, you know what's, you know what's even better than that is when you have one objective that you can't get, and so you're swinging around the city going, are there any crimes? Okay, good. Is it prisoner joyride? No? Okay, I'm just going to swing to a different part of the city and come back then. Because that's the only one I need the optional objective for.
Oh, okay. You were actually going for that?
Yep.
Most of those I completed the first or second time, because like some of them, like the task it wanted you to do became more, a little too difficult to do both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like, if it was a certain do this thing so many times, then I would sometimes mess it up and defeat them all before. Yeah, some of the Sable crimes especially.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. Oh, anyway. There were also at the, there was the prisoner camps and then there were the Sable outposts, but there were only like four Sable outposts or something like that. There weren't many of mm-hmm. those.
Now, you did bring up another complaint I have, which is very simple, and that is, they give you the best suit power at the beginning of the game, and
yes,
then
they do.
That makes everyone after that less exciting because it's not as good as Web Blossom, which will, you know, immediately take out most of the enemies within the area and disable the rest so that you can toss them into a wall and take them out.
Yes, the there's a couple later that I can't remember what it was called, but the one that gives you like super strength for a limited amount of time, that one was pretty good too in certain situations. But the definitely the Web Blossom was really powerful and very, I would always go back to it. I would try out whatever the new power is I unlocked. And then it's like, did you ever try out the Quip superpower?
Yeah, I was
really disappointed by that one.
It's not very good quips.
No. Like, they were too generic. Like, generally speaking, the quips he's making already during combat are just fine. The generic ones from that just don't land well, and then they also do like nothing. I unlocked that suit, the comic suit,
mm-hmm.
Because it required a challenge token. So I completed a challenge, unlocked that suit, left that power activated or whatever, like attached to it because I wanted to try it out. And then immediately I got hit with a Taskmaster fight for the first time. And I didn't even know this was going to happen. It was just like, okay, completed, got the challenge tokens, unlocked the suit, and then he gets captured by Taskmaster, and then you have to do this fight. I was like, okay, I'm going to try out this superpower against Taskmaster, and it's like, did it do anything? I was really let down in that moment. Mm-hmm. but that was my other complaint was Taskmaster, so yes. I feel like that was added way too late in the game, because I was watching the, I know I paid attention enough to know that past the 50% mark of the campaign, I still had no idea how to get challenge tokens, and at that point I had unlocked everything I could as far as gadgets and suits that didn't require challenge tokens, and I was just stuck at a point, and I was just like, what's going on here? Did I miss something? Are there secretly challenges out there that I'm like not doing that I should have been doing?
Well, it says, when you look at one of those, it says continue the story to unlock challenge tokens. Yeah. So there was a certain point where I was just like, you know what, I guess I still want to do these, you know, side quests and other things, but I guess I will just keep doing the main story just so that I can get these, unlock these challenges so that I can actually use the other things that I'm getting.
And then the other thing I had to complain about Taskmasters was the most of the challenges I actually had fun with, but the drone challenges, I wasn't able to get a gold in any of those.
I actually found those pretty fun for the most part, just because the swinging and movement in that game was really fun.
Sure.
And that was the main point where it felt like I actually had to pay attention to the mechanics of it, that and some of the like chase scenes you had to, but not nearly as much.
Not really. Yeah.
On the other hand, there were definitely points where they were trying to get you to do something that the movement system was not made for. Like, if you needed to go under a bridge or something like that, the whole system is like, oh, you do anything and you go up because that's what you do. And if you run into the wall, you just immediately run straight up. You can't drop off of it easily. And that got frustrating. But for the most part, I actually enjoyed the drone challenges. I did get gold in all of the challenges.
Oh, wow. The combat challenges were the ones that I loved the most. Surprise, surprise. Those were the ones that I regularly got a gold on my first attempt. And I was like, yeah, I love this combat challenge. The stealth ones were fun, too.
Yeah,
As far as movement, I thought the bomb challenges were pretty good, mm-hmm. as far as, like, needing to pay attention to, like, where they are and how to get there quickly. But the drone ones, having to both chase the drone as quickly as you could and also follow it in a way where you're able to hit every one of those, the little, like, checkpoints that it leaves behind.
Yeah, they said it was spy cams, but basically it's just a jump through the rings challenge.
Yeah, that it was the combination of that really screwed me. Either I could get all of those checkpoints, or mm-hmm. I could chase the drone quickly. I was not able to do both. I could not do both, and that was annoying.
Yeah, see, the combat challenges are part of my other big, the other half of my big complaint, which was also related to the science stations, which is, it felt like they had too much in this game that they just threw at the wall to see what would stick. They had so many different challenges and tokens and kinds of distractions, and some of them just felt like they were there just to be there. Like, a lot of the research stations had some weird little mini game that I felt that might be interesting if you had developed it and had several iterations, like the Taskmaster challenges, but you didn't do much with it because it was just a one-off twist. And the combat challenges, really, I actually did some of the combat challenges, but not a lot, in the Arkham Asylum games. And
I remember I did it for Arkham Asylum specifically, but I never got like 100% or anything on them. I just, yeah.
See, but, to me, the combat challenges felt like they were there because that's a thing that games like this do. And what bothered me about them was I was trying to string together long combos and, you know, not lose the combo, because that was sort of what I expected from the Arkham games having similar challenges. But the thing is, in the Arkham games, it's about figuring out how to keep that combo going, and it also gives you a score for using different moves. These combat challenges were really frustrating to me until I realized the secret is the combo doesn't matter. All that matters is you defeat them as quickly as possible.
Yes, yep. Which Web Blossom does a really good job at.
Yeah, and that, I mean, it was kind of interesting to figure out how to optimize that, but it just wasn't nearly as complex as I thought
That's
it would
true.
Be. And, like, similarly, the stealth was fun, but it was also, like, a lot less involved than the Arkham games. The sort of, I don't know, I'm making a lot of comparisons there, because it was definitely
easy to compare them.
Yes, it feels a lot like it was combining some of the more focused parts of the Arkham games with the... well, obviously the later Arkham games were open world, but it was a lot... The traversal felt a lot more like, Prototype, where you can just run wherever you want, and you are just exploring at... exploring and finding things hidden everywhere, whereas Arkham usually walking around is a little bit more involved. I don't know, my point is that they just took inspiration from a lot of different games, and it felt like a lot of the things were not as well developed as if they had focused on less kinds of challenges.
That's probably fair.
I mean, obviously you really enjoyed the combat and the combat challenges, but that was for me, that was a big example of it just wasn't as deep as I wanted it to be.
Sure. It was when I was getting over 100 hit combos, that was when I realized that, hey, this combat system is clicking for me and I'm having a lot of fun. Because yeah, like I said, I came from Arkham, where I was lucky if I was getting into the 20 and 30s in the Arkham series, and it was always a little bit frustrating. Especially, like, I remember Shadow of Mordor, where there are sometimes just giant crowds, and I would nope out of those and just stealth instead, because just getting into that combat was not fun for me in those games. But in this game, I loved crowds like that. Sable. When the Sable jetpack people showed up, that was the first time in this game where I got a little annoyed. And it was mostly because the first time the jetpack people show up, there's a little text pop-up that says, hey, use this move to, like, close in on... But I didn't read that because I was paying attention to everything else that was going on. Mm-hmm. it took me a while to really figure out on my own how to handle those particular types of bad guys. But otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, I think that I didn't have that problem just because I was constantly trying to zip to enemies as quickly as I could already, so that was naturally how I tried to handle them. Although I did find them, they just felt a lot more aggressive at attacking you while you were dealing with other enemies compared to anything else in the game, and that was that tripped me up a lot more. That when I was fighting the Sable troops, that was when I started having a lot more challenge in the combat in general.
Mm-hmm. They have, like, there's a lot of them that have guns, and if you don't pay attention, you will die.
Mm-hmm.
That was my experience, at least. Anything else as far as your dislikes?
Yeah, the pacing of the game overall just felt weird, with the fact that I think it may have been more like half, but it certainly felt like the plot with the demons took up the majority of the game.
It takes up two acts, whereas then the third act is everything else. So yeah.
I mean, I was actually just thinking of the middle act being the part with mostly with the demons. Like you saw them in the first act was leading up to the big debut, and you were fighting a lot of them, but just the middle part of where you yeah. know that it's Martin Lee and that he's, you know, you're trying to figure out what his plot is and stop it. I felt like as far as the part of the story I was interested in, that was a huge part of the game, and then the part which was even what I didn't see all of the trailers, but the one of the things that made me pay attention to this game was the one of the E3
yeah, where they basically show you the beginning of the third act.
Right. So I was like, okay, I'm wondering when that will happen, because that was a big part of it, was all of his, you know, worst villains being released, and even then they did show that, you know, oh, the big reveal at the end of that trailer was Mr. Negative, so I knew that he would be part of it, but it... I just kind of wish that... I think it would have done better if the pacing had evened out a little more so that you weren't... Especially since, like you said, half of the crimes that you have to do if you want to get 100% are in that third act, and I think that would have felt less ridiculous if the third act weren't, like, less than a quarter of the game if it were a bigger part.
I definitely agree that the third act was really accelerated, because, like, we spend an entire act just taking out Mr. Negative, and then in the third act, we are double-teaming villains after, like, two or three missions, and then it's immediately after that, you're defeating Martin Lee in, like, one or two missions, and then, like, the very next mission is you're taking on Doc Ock, right? Like, yeah. It is so accelerated on that final act.
It really felt like... I mean, obviously, it took longer than one act in a movie, but it felt like... it just to compare, it felt like the... I guess it felt more like, you know, you were watching a season of a show and, like, the first 12 episodes were, or, you know, the first, like, 10 or 11 episodes was all about Martin Lee, and then the last two episodes was the Sinister Six.
Yeah. That, maybe, like, four episodes, but yes, it definitely, like, no, you didn't give this anywhere near the room to breathe that it deserved.
I think that's all I've got, except for the next part of our show.
The noteworthy moments of achievement or frustration?
Yes.
My achievement is that I got platinum, and I would assume you did too based off of your frustration, but go ahead.
No. I actually didn't, because there were a few things that I didn't do, but...
Oh.
I actually tried to get all of the secret photos. I don't even know if that's necessary for platinum.
No, it isn't. Well, all you get is another suit.
So, as you alluded to, towards the end of the game, you have to get to level 50 and unlock one of your suit mods, or replace one of your suit mods with the last one, which puts a little icon on your mini-map where you can take a secret photo.
An icon that pops in and out a lot.
Yeah.
It's really inconsistent.
And so that was kind of a fun thing to do in the last act, you know, swinging around, just going back and forth down different streets looking for these photos. And it even led me to one of the hidden trophies, because one of the photos is Uncle Ben's gravestone, where you can then also press triangle to pay your respects.
Yeah, I didn't I didn't get there until after the game ended. When did you get there?
I think it was before the final act, but
so I got there and Aunt May is right next to him, and
I went back there after the end of the game. I went back because I knew where it was, and I figured that would be the case, and I took a photo. Speaking of which, you know what would really help is if any of the photos that you took during the game with the built-in camera were saved anywhere, which I didn't realize they were not until the end of the game.
Oh, that sucks.
When I said, okay, now that I've got like 30 or 40 out of the 50 secret photos, I should figure out where I can look at all of those photos so I can see which ones I'm missing. But you can't. Which is also kind of frustrating, because there were also points in the game where I was like, hey, that's a cool shot. I'll take out my spider camera and take a picture.
No, I just hit the PlayStation 4 share button for all those. I mean, there's also that really nice photo mode, which I played around with a little bit. And I thought that was kind of cool, too, where you could just, like, mm-hmm. unlock it and zoom in and, like, do all sorts of fun photo mode stuff. But anyway, yeah, sorry.
I played with that a bit, too, but...
That sucks.
Yeah. And that would have also helped with the fact that I couldn't find the last photo. I know the, looking it up, one that a lot of people miss is the Statue of Liberty. I did get that one. But I found a list of every secret photo op, and I checked every location, and I couldn't find one that I was missing. And so I did it again, and I went and I made sure I physically looked at and pointed my camera at every landmark that was a secret photo op. And I still couldn't get the last one, and I finally gave up. And that was a frustrating way to end the game.
That really sucks.
Because, yeah, that's what I ended up doing, was just trying to fill those out after the actual end of the story. Also, because then you get more, you know, phone calls and podcasts from J. Jonah Jameson. So, for a while, it was fun just swinging around and getting those final updates while looking for photos.
Yes, so, like I said, I had to fight 50 crimes, so I did notice that I did enjoy the fact that the following podcasts after you've saved New York, he's like, hey, I was wrong about Spider-Man, and then he's like, well, maybe I wasn't wrong about Spider-Man. And then he goes all the way to, you know what? Spider-Man is like a broken clock. He's only right, this broken clock is right twice a day or whatever. Like, right. he just, it's a great little transition there of him admitting, like, hey, Spider-Man saved the day. And then it's like, how do we know he didn't release it himself? And it's like, it's great. Those are great. But then what I thought was very silly, and I had noticed it throughout the entire game, but it was particularly silly at this point, was that then he started going even further back in events that I had already finished, and it got to, like, then he started talking about how I was doing the student missions, and then, like, the demon one about fighting the mentally ill happened while I was fighting these crimes. And then the whole Tombstone line of podcasts didn't play for me until I was doing these. So, like, somehow,
that's kind of funny.
Somehow they had, like, queued up all of these podcasts, but they only play them every now and then. And I guess just the priority, I was always doing a story mission or something by the time the next podcast was supposed to play, so he was always doing that instead of going back to when I had actually done those things. So, yeah, for a good hour, I would say, of my fighting the crimes post-game, he was the reason I didn't just completely give up.
That's kind of funny. I will say another very minor annoyance was the fact that if your podcast was interrupted, which would happen if you actually started fighting a crime, then you could go into the pause menu to listen to it, but I was really hoping it would just, you could hit play and go back to swinging around and it would keep playing, and I don't know why it does that. If you leave the menu, it just stops.
I realized that very early on. So if he started playing an episode and I wanted to listen to it, I would just stand outside of wherever I was about to start a mission until he finished talking, and then I would start the mission. one other thing I wanted to point out or mention before we go to our final thoughts. The Stan Lee cameo. I thought that it hit me more than I had expected, largely due to the news that Stan Lee had passed back in November. But on top of that, the fact that this cameo of him is him telling MJ, and I quote, "You two were always my favorites." That really hit me. Because I was not expecting it, and it was, he'll be missed, and it's really great that his cameo thing, while at times a meme, but it really, he cared is the way I would say it, and it And it's always been, like, common knowledge that Peter Parker, that Spider-Man was one of, like, that's one of his favorites. He always talked about that, and just the way that they had this in there, and that line just really, it really hit me. It was good.
Yeah, that also reminded me of that, the cameo in Into the Spider-Verse kind of hit me unexpectedly, just based on where it was in the story. I don't want to, you know, get into too much, but I agree that the way he showed up and the fact that he specifically said you two are always my favorites was nice.
Yeah. Anything else before we go to final thoughts?
Nope.
Go ahead, David.
I think that the developers set out to create the ultimate Spider-Man game, no pun intended, because, you know, ultimate Spider-Man is a different Spider-Man. But they packed in as much as they possibly could while also making their own story that was not, you know, beholden to a specific movie version like a lot of the past Spider-Man games are, or having to repeat his origin story.
No, yeah, and distancing themselves from the origin story was really smart. Yeah,
definitely. And I think they succeeded in doing that, in making, like, the ultimate all-in-one Spider-Man game. Despite some of the things not quite working for me, they made a great game that feels like everything a Spider-Man game should be, from the web-swinging to the way he fights, which is very... very acrobatic and like grabbing things and zipping around at long distances, and the way it takes old and new elements of the Spider-Man mythos and brings them into the story. I think compared to like every open world game before, it feels like it's sort of playing things safe and just sort of doing a lot of stuff that they knew worked well before, but just standing on its own, I think it is a great game, and especially a great Spider-Man game.
I couldn't agree more. I don't think I could have started 2019 out with a better game than Marvel Spider-Man. This was a marvelous open world game in which I had a blast exploring and enjoying the story being told. This is one of those games that not only stands on its own in a fantastic way, but it even got me more excited and interested in checking out other Spider-Man media. Spider-Man is just a visual treat on the PlayStation 4, and it includes one of the most impressively realized New Yorks that I've seen rendered in a game. And I had relatives from New York over for the holidays, and they were able to recognize districts just by me swinging through them. And I thought that was pretty great of just how well realized this game was. Like, I don't think you could say that about Prototype. I mean, sure, you know it's New York, but...
I will say, while playing Spider-Man, I did have moments of like, oh yeah, I know where that is, because I know... that I already had a fight here in Prototype.
Oh, okay. I mean, most of the island we're on is that completely devastated island, but okay. The red zone.
Well, also the first Prototype.
Oh, sure. I barely remember that. Anyways, other game. So yeah, the combat of Spider-Man is a blast, with so many different ways to approach it and incentives to continue trying new things. And finally, the story took us places and spent time with characters that were both new and old. But even the old characters had new light to them. And it was overall just a fantastic experience. So that's it for Spider-Man. You can join probably just me next month in playing Kingdom Hearts 3. Because you said you weren't going to join me last I talked, and I'm definitely playing Kingdom Hearts 3, whether you want to or not.
I may just get it. I don't know. I enjoy the Kingdom Hearts games. I'm not as totally 100% into the franchise as you are, but I do want to play it eventually. I guess it may as well be now.
I have been so excited about Kingdom Hearts 3 and kind of like Persona 5 from 2 years ago that there's nothing that's going to stop me from dropping every other game and playing Kingdom Hearts 3 instead. Like, this has been way too long in the waiting. And I've been very excited about it. So I would be willing to do a solo cast if needed. But yeah, so that's my next game. And I don't know if it'll be next month. It depends on how things go. But maybe. Anything else before we completely wrap up, David?
Yeah, well, I guess just to bring it back to Spider-Man and even into the Spider-Verse again, I've been thinking about why I like both of those stories so much. And just sort of the through line, I think, is that it made me realize that I really enjoy stories where superhero stories where there's all of this history, but the creators can just make their own story that's not, you know, part of, doesn't have to be part of this massive universe. It doesn't have to, you know, bring in the exact same versions of the characters that have shown up before. It doesn't have to spend part of its runtime setting up the next, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe crossover, which, you know, as many people have noted, really hurt some of the some of those movies. And yeah, I hope that we can
Thor see one. More.
Yeah, and Iron Man 2 was one that
a bit of that involved as well,
a lot
yeah.
of setting up, but
and then some of that the origin stories just aren't as interesting. Like, I know people liked Doctor Strange, but it shares a lot with the other origin stories for Marvel. Like, I think Doctor Strange is a better character than his origin story lets on. But
yeah, I just hope that, you know, in the future we get to see more of these sort of, you know, alternate takes on well-known heroes that don't have, like, not like a reboot that has to be a whole franchise necessarily, but
it's the whole, like, Thor Ragnarok. Once you get to a point where you don't have to worry about establishing the character, but you can actually have fun with him, like, right. that's what we love about comics, and that'll happen more with the movies, I feel. Hopefully. We'll see how the, I can't remember, are they calling it Captain Marvel?
Yes.
Yes. The Carol Danvers, which I'm sure it is the origin story, right? But yes. We'll see how that one goes.
But yeah, that's kind of what I mean, is stories where you don't have to, like, assume that everybody watching it has no idea who this character is, where you can take the rich history, but
Black Panther is a good example where they didn't have to do an origin story for him.
What I'm saying is if you could let me finish my sentence here. I'm just saying you can use the history and the knowledge of the character without being tied to this existing universe and having to keep everything consistent, so that, you know, it's like, I will say, this game had my second favorite version of Dr. Octopus. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse had my favorite version, and that was building on what everybody knows who Dr. Octopus is, without saying, yes, this is the exact same character. And I think that ability to come up with new twists without having to hold people's hands and introduce them to everybody one at a time is great, and I hope that we see more sort of independent stories like that.
I think what really I enjoyed about the Into the Spider-Verse version is the subversion of it. Yes. It is very good.
And yeah, Black Panther and Thor Ragnarok are both movies that are within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but like, even though Thor Ragnarok is, you know, the third in the Thor series alone, it still had this big tonal shift, and a lot of it took place, you know, in a place that was totally separate from the setting and just had some key characters that you were familiar with, and I think it was a lot better than the other Thor movies and a lot of the other MCU movies because they could play with that in a sort of self-contained way.
That is the one that I liken most to my experience with the Marvel comics, where a new writer will come in and will reinvent that character while still being true to the character, but it'll be just because of a writing style or something will be a new take, will have a new personality, will approach things in a new fascinating way. And that's, I think that is the perfect movie parallel to how the writer makes such a big difference for these characters. Because very similarly, the Thor comics, I don't mm-hmm. really care about them up until, I don't know his name, but the current head writer of the Thor series just did a fantastic job with reinventing that character, and then going on with Lady Thor and all of that, just so good.
Yeah, going back to what I was saying about with comic books, we'll sometimes jump in if there's a specific storyline or event that I can enjoy on its own. That's how I like to enjoy them. Mm-hmm. When I was reading Ms. Marvel for a while, which I really enjoyed, it sort of got interrupted by this.
It did.
Big Marvel, oh, the universe is ending and it's colliding with other universes. And not only did it tell me, like, hey, we want you to go buy all of these other Marvel comics you don't care about, it also felt like the story that they were building up of her character got put on the sideline, and that was just frustrating. So I guess I should, you know, look into which are those stories that you say were a particular writer takes over and gives it their own style, and especially if they're able to follow through on their own storylines, which I know sometimes they can.
Yeah, but I do agree that sometimes when the big crossover events happen, it does derail a lot of the storylines that go on. But I know, for example, the Superior Spider-Man, that is its own self-contained story, and then it's after that that they actually go into the Spider-Verse storyline. So you could do those like back-to-back if you wanted. I plan to pick up Spider-Verse eventually, because especially after watching this movie, and I know that's where they introduce like Spider-Gwen and stuff like that, and I want to mm-hmm. read that. So I'm going to read more Spider-Man in the future here.
Funny enough, I actually follow someone on Twitter that talks about comics a lot, and they, their handle is Colin Space Twinks, and they have talked about how a lot of people are probably going to watch Into the Spider-Verse and then look up the original comics and be very disappointed. But
oh, really?
You know, I don't know if they have higher standards than a lot of people, but I
don't think just, Miles is going to have an origin story in the middle of the comic book version, but
you know, I think that they probably, you know, have really good opinions on comics since they read a lot of them and have good critical valuations, but I was just had to think of that when you said that you were going to go get the actual Spider-Verse comics.
Eventually. Anyways, Kingdom Hearts 3 is next month. I'm excited. It actually comes out in like 3 days from when we're recording this, so I'm itching to play that. I would like to take a moment to thank Carbohydrin and Funk Fiction for letting us use their songs for our intro and outros, respectively. Their work is great, and you can check out more by following the links in the description. And with that, we leave you by saying, starting a new journey may not be so hard, or maybe it has already begun. There are many worlds, but they share the same sky, one destiny. That was a Kingdom Hearts quote.
That's how I like our outros to be, simple and clean.
Bye.